We're on with David Fowler this morning, the Senior Vice President of Capital Markets at Associated Bank. He's our Brexit expert. David, good morning. Welcome back.
Good morning, Steve. How are you today?
Doing very well, thank you. We mentioned Brexit because, you know, you are our go-to guy when it comes to Brexit, and it really is the story that keeps on giving, isn't it?
It really is. It seems to be the unending saga. As each day passes, the problems seem to just keep coming and coming.
I want to focus in on a couple of things today. Number one is banking rules, where Great Britain is concerned, and this impacts investors in this country who do a lot of business overseas as well. There's a review ongoing about banking rules. Talk to us about what this means.
In the UK, you know, as we know, since January 1st of this year, the UK is no longer required to follow EU banking regulations. And this is really kind of, I think, this and the topic we're probably going to talk about in a few moments, both of them are really tied up with this idea of what Britain is going to do in a post-Brexit world. And to an extent, it comes down to the kind of, do they swipe left or do they swipe right? And by that, I mean, are they going to look to emulate what's going on in the European Union in order to keep access to that market? Or are they going to radically change what they're doing and really look to move into new markets? And I think the review that, for example, they just recently done on banking regulations in the UK kind of shows this quite clearly. The review basically is talking about separating the trading activities of banks from the core retail commercial banking activities, which, you know, if we think back, is very similar to what we saw in the United States in the 2008-2009 period, with the enactment of the Volcker rules. You know, prior to that, banks had both commercial activities, but they also, many banks, had large trading activities. And there were people, often referred to as proprietary traders, who were trading the bank's capital for the bank's profit. The introduction of Volcker rules here stopped that, and it forced banks in the U.S. to separate those activities. And in many cases, they actually stopped engaging in those activities in the U.S. and move those proprietary trading desks to new entities or to new locations, often actually in London. What the review that concluded this week found in the U.K. is that they're trying to basically ring-fence the commercial activities of banks from any kind of trading activity in order to basically make them a lower-risk investment potential, to make them more attractive to overseas investors, because obviously their income flows would tend to be much more kind of consistent without the ups and downs of the trading world. So I think this is one of the areas where they're trying to become more attractive to U.S. investors, maybe more attractive to U.S. bank operations, to make them more harmonious with the kind of U.S. banking approach.
Investors looking for smooth sailing, I think, given what we've just been through with the pandemic. This sounds like it's going to be complicated and difficult. Is that the experience that we saw here in the U.S.? And it took a while to sort of separate these things out, didn't it?
It did. And everything to do with Brexit is going to be complicated, difficult, and much longer than we thought. And I don't think this is really any exception to that. But it does give a contrast point between what the UK is doing and what the European Union is doing. Now, part of that is because the European Union really didn't, the banks in the European Union had their trading operations primarily moved to London anyway, really since the signing of the Single European Act at the beginning of the 2000s, where banks were allowed to passport their financial services activities across member states. And once that happened, a lot of the trading activity that was done by banks in Germany or in Austria or Paris, France or wherever, all moved over to London because that was a center of excellence where there was, you know, plenty of staff, plenty of support activities, plenty of, you know, financial technology firms, all the kind of stuff that you need to support that type of business. It's going to be interesting to see what happens now with these proprietary groups, whether they can stay as separate entities within the UK, or whether they will have to migrate somewhere else. Because certainly the profits that are involved in a lot of these trading activities are so substantial that they're not going to go away, but they may have to relocate again.
You alluded to this earlier, the idea of London as one of the financial capitals of the world. And in a post-Brexit world, there are questions about whether that is going to continue. Talk to us a little bit about the danger here for not only Britain as a whole, but London as a center of finance.
Well, you know, it's important to remember that you know, London, like the financial services business in London represents about 7% of UK GDP. So this is quantums more than fisheries or, you know, all the things that, you know, were the headlines of all of the negotiations prior to the end of last year. And, you know, the financial service sector in the UK, you know, had their hand up for the last couple of years saying, what about us? What about us? Because they are now in a situation where the EU does not have a common set of regulations for non-EU members, non-EU states providing financial services within the European Union. It's a piecemeal. Every member state has its own regulatory requirements, which we've discussed before in the past. This means that, for example, Barclays Bank, which is a large UK bank, wants to operate in throughout the 27 member states in the European Union. They have to go through 27 individual regulatory reviews. You know, no one wants to do that. And this is causing the London market to lose business. So, you know, basically on January 2nd or January 3rd, whatever the first working day of this year was, 90% of trading in European equities moved to Amsterdam. But that was all in London. And within that day, it was gone. And it's unlikely to come back in the foreseeable future. There are many other activities that are likely to leave, particularly EU-focused activities, are likely to leave the London markets and move to, you know, Germany or France or wherever, where they have passporting within the European Union. So, you know, that's on one side. The other side, again, is, you know, which way do they want to look? Do they want to live up to the ideals of Brexit, which was, you know, control of our borders, control of our money, control of our laws, and kind of plow our own way through the world? Or do we want to basically try to replicate what the European Union has without being in the European Union? And I think for the London market, the idea right now seems to be that the focus is going to be external to the European Union, not trying to replicate what's going on. But this could be quite bumpy, and all of these things make it difficult, or more difficult, for U.S. companies who are trying to operate, whether they be in the financial services, you know, in banking or insurance or financial technology or any of these types of business, but also, you know, companies are involved in manufacturing and looking to relocate within Europe somewhere. Where do they pick? You know, and generally the more kind of question marks, the more uncertainty, the more things you don't know the answers to, the less attractive that place becomes.
The European Union has made no plan and made no secret of its plans to build up its capital markets. And, you know, Asia is right there in the mix as well. There really stands the possibility that those areas could be elevated while Britain is not.
Oh, I think that's absolutely what the European Union would like to do that, and the Asian markets as well. You know, they want to take advantage of maybe reduced presence of, you know, in the London markets. London was the financial capital of the world. It's by far the biggest in volume. It's by far the biggest in add to GDP. And all of these other kind of smaller locations, albeit quite large, are looking to gain market share because this is a business where, you know, transaction volume does count. And I think the longer the UK is in this kind of limbo where they're trying to work out what they want to be, the more opportunity there is for everybody else to basically take some of their lunch.
And if all of this wasn't enough to digest, the Scottish parliamentary election is coming up, I think, on May 6th, and there's an independence movement there, and, you know, that's something else that we need to watch out for, isn't it?
It does. It also adds another level of uncertainty. The Scottish National Party, the SNP, is the largest party in the devolved government in Scotland. And they have stated categorically on their manifesto that a vote for them is a vote for independence. So, you know, it's likely that not only will they be the largest party, it's likely their market share or vote share will increase. So this is going to be an issue. Now, Boris Johnson has said that there's absolutely no way that he's going to sanction a referendum on the border. But frankly, it may not be up to him. I think if the pressure is large enough, then, you know, these things tend to get forced by events rather than by choice. So they do have that. Nicola Sturgeon, who is the leader of the SNP, you know, it's got pretty good poll numbers. Most people think she handled the COVID situation pretty well. You have to remember that Scotland, as an entity, voted to remain in the European Union rather than to leave. So there is some bad feeling about not only, you know, their views being discarded, but also having regulations kind of imposed on them by Westminster. And it's the kind of ironic thing where Scotland would like to have the deal that Northern Ireland has, and Northern Ireland would love to have the deal that Scotland has. So whether Scotland leaves or not, you know, it's not just you leave the UK today and you're part of the European Union tomorrow. That's not going to happen. There would be an accession period, which would last, you know, probably 5 years. And there will be a lot of toing and froing in that period. It's not an easy thing to do. But certainly, I think it's kind of an aspirational idea that the Scots have. And I think it's one that's going to come to the forefront and will add, again, another level of uncertainty as to what's going on in the UK. Is the UK today what we will see as the UK in 5 or 10 years' time? Which is important if you're making investments inward there. Yes. You know, you're not looking at your returns tomorrow. You're looking at, if I'm going to spend, you know, $100 million building some huge facility, is this going to make sense in 10 years' time?
Yeah, I was going to say you have to feel for global investors right now who are navigating all of this. There are no easy answers, are there?
But not really. You know, the part of it is, again, you know, we don't really know what the new normal is going to be yet either. So, you know, when you look at, you know, the UK, they've done, you know, pretty good job at, you know, on the vaccine front. The European Union, much less so. What happens when the European Union catches up? There's so many uncertainties. And how is industry, how is commercial activity going to be structured once we all go back to whatever the new normal is going to be? I think it's very difficult for investors right now, particularly on the global side. I think, from a domestic point of view, people can, I think, better understand what's going on. And, you know, make a stab at where they think, you know, the future is going to unfold. But I think on the global side, it's very difficult.
David, great conversation as always. How can people get a hold of you and have a one-on-one if they want?
Sure. Well, you can always get us on the trading desk, which is 866-524-8836. Or you can always send me an email. And my email address is david.fowler, that's david.fowler@associatedbank.com.
All right. We'll see you next time, David. Thank you.
Thanks.